And again, I don't know exactly what the, you know, sort of regulatory reimbursement issues are going to be, but I guess, you know, in terms of which one you would give, and then we'll get to rucaparib in a second, but just in terms of this maintenance situation, if olaparib then becomes approved in platinum-sensitive BRCA germline, theoretically you'd have the choice of niraparib or olaparib in a BRCA germline patient, correct?
Correct.
Coin flip?
Well, I think that's a very difficult one for physicians to choose. There may be a price question to look at. There is this different spectrum of toxicity between the two drugs, but, you know, both are broadly manageable. It's difficult to know how the two companies are going to market their two drugs in that setting. Of course, what there is at the moment is much longer follow-up with the olaparib maintenance drug. And that, of course, we don't know what's going to happen with niraparib in the longer term. And that may be something that the company would play to in terms of trying to promote the use of olaparib in that germline positive population.
Well, again, also just thinking about the way things are right now, too, I guess if you had a patient who was platinum refractory, who'd gotten several lines of chemo, who was germline positive, the classic indication for olaparib, you couldn't really give niraparib to a patient like that, at least from a regulatory perspective.
No, you couldn't. In that situation where you've not got at least a partial response to the chemotherapy, which is where the label is, partial response to platinum-based chemotherapy, then maintenance PARP inhibitor. But in the setting where you've got bulky disease, platinum resistance, then you rely on the label of olaparib, the current FDA label for olaparib, or the current FDA label for rucaparib.